Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews, and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
You are listening to Zed Games, the greatest gaming radio program in Australia, nay, the world. We are coming to you live from 4ZZZ in Brisbane. You might be listening to us around the nation on the Community Radio Network. I am Lee. Joining me for this episode is Razor.
Hey.
Ms. Candy Payne.
Hi.
And B Bravo.
Yo.
What are we discussing on this episode, Ray?
This episode, we're celebrating 350 episodes of Zed Games.
That's a lot. That's a lot of weeks.
That is a lot of...
I've been here.
That's a lot of weeks.
We're all very old now.
It's a lot of pain. And a lot of pleasure bringing the show every week, 350 times. But Lee, you've been playing Tyranny.
I have, yes. I've been playing an RPG set in a world where evil won. It used to be that this was some sort of speculative fiction thing, and now it turns out that it's fairly prophetic. Shame that.
Relevant.
Yeah.
And B, you've been playing The Last Guardian.
Yeah, I'll try not to cry when I talk about it.
Oh, it's that good.
I'll let you know.
She can cry for not good reasons. And Lee, you had the pleasure of attending the Game Awards in Los Angeles last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You haven't been here.
No, I was because I was at the thing. Yes, I was there.
You've been missed, apparently.
Yeah, well, that's nice, you know.
Look, I was just waiting for updates from, you know, all your travels.
Yeah.
But yeah, this too. This is probably important too.
Yes, I was there. I saw all the things. Kojima said he loved me, and that was nice.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he said it to everyone who was in the room, but he said that to me.
He was looking at
it was
you.
Directed towards
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
There was
yeah.
a connection.
I get
know.
It.
And I think it was very important for the both of us, really.
Looking forward to hearing more about the Kojima thing later on, Lee.
Yes.
But first, the Week in Gaming News headlines. Candy, what have we got?
Sure. Five Ubisoft executives have been fined a total of 1.2 million euros by the French Stock Market Regulatory Commission, AMF. The AMF claims that the executives, including Ubisoft Montreal CEO Yanis Malat, offloaded mass amounts of stock in October 2013, days before the announcement that anticipated titles Watch Dogs and The Crew would be delayed until 2014. Company stock dropped by 26% following the announcement. Ubisoft will appeal the decision and deny any wrongdoing, saying that the AMF's decision represents a serious misunderstanding of the game development and production process.
That seems kind of serious, though.
Oh, yeah.
And that does tend to happen every time someone announces that a game's been delayed or things have gone a bit fluey with the production process. And I guess if you owned a lot of stock in your company and wanted money and you knew that was happening, you know, you could do that. Maybe it is just a weird case of, like, no cause and effect there, but... Like, you probably wouldn't sell your stock moments before you knew
yeah.
something bad was going to happen
well,
to said stock.
It seems like, at the very least, there should be some sort of internal regulation that prevents major stockholders from offloading or whatever around sensitive periods like that.
Yeah, I think there generally are regulations like that, actually, which is why this is happening.
Yeah. So they say that they couldn't have known that this delay was going to take place because it was the call... of Soli, the big boss, Yves Guillemot. So he made the call to delay the game. But I find it unlikely that these people who are working closely with the team wouldn't have known that the game was going to be delayed at that time.
Yeah.
Like, you're working on something, you know if it's not ready.
Yeah.
Or not, even if it's not your personal call to make, I think it's a bit suspicious.
Yeah, because you ask them, you're like, hey, how's things going with Watch Dogs? And if they're like, it's going fantastically, we are so looking forward to this date. Or if they go, ha 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 ha, yes, and then they start to sweat, that's when you know you should sell your stock.
I hear that a lot in my office. It's that
sell your stock.
It's been revealed that a man charged with stealing $4.8 million from his employer spent around $1 million of the stolen funds on popular mobile game Game of War. The 45-year-old man from Sacramento, USA, pleaded guilty to wire fraud and money laundering over an 8-year period ending when he quit the company in 2015. The rest of the money was spent on luxury cars, plastic surgery, a fancy golf club membership, and season tickets to sports games. He's due for sentencing in May and faces up to 40 years in prison. Game of War is one of the highest grossing mobile games on the market, with the average player spending $550 each year.
I'm going to say that now this guy's in jail, the average player spend is going to drop next year.
This is basically the realization of, I can't remember that movie right now, the one with The Office, and Jennifer Aniston is in it, and...
Office Space?
Is it Office Space? Yeah, it's Office Space. Anyway, that, like, you know how they all take, like, a half of a penny
at a
time? Like, it's just that plot actually realized over an eight-year period.
Yeah, the $4.8 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking of, like, the most irresponsible person I know in my personal life, and I'm pretty sure he would have done a better job at spending $4.8 million.
Yeah,
like, I mean, fancy car, plastic surgery.
What did he have done?
I mean,
well, what?
Assuming
what can't
a house
you have
as
done?
Well.
Yeah. Yeah, but, like, $1 million, that's the worst, nerdiest way to spend $1 million, like, on a mobile game.
I mean, he's helping out that company.
You reckon they'll let him keep playing in prison? Because he's got 40 years ahead of him to really get into it.
Don't think he's allowed to have a phone in there.
There's no internet in the prison.
What a bummer, dude. Waste of a mil.
Yeah. Do Australian prisons have Wi-Fi? Anyway, what's the next one?
Never been in, don't know. German studio Crytek is once again facing complaints about not paying workers, with some employees saying they haven't seen a paycheck in 2 months. The studio faced similar complaints in 2014 as it fended off insolvency. Once a developer of big-budget blockbusters like Crysis 3 and Rise, Son of Rome, in 2013 the studio announced its intention to shift gears to focus on free-to-play console games.
So they were in a similar situation, and then they ended up managing to get themselves out of that when they sold their engine to Amazon for Amazon's console thing, which then they turned the Crytek engine into this other free to distribute Kijiga, and that was, I think they ended up getting about $97 million for that, which is not peanuts certainly, and it is a shame and a surprise that they are right back in this same scenario.
The developers of zombie survival VR game Arizona Sunshine have quickly reversed a decision to limit certain game modes to users with a specific CPU chip installed. The game's Horde and Apocalyptic modes were unavailable to players who didn't have 5th, 6th or 7th generation Intel i7 CPU chips, a fact that was undisclosed until frustrated players began asking questions on the game's message board. In response to the backlash, the game modes have now been unlocked for all players.
That's really odd. It's weird that, like, you wouldn't expect Intel to do a move like that, right? They wouldn't get behind that.
Yeah, it's strange. And I'm glad that this sort of CPU locking thing has been squashed now because of this. That's super weird. The worst part of it is that they didn't advertise this at all. Mm. It was just left for people to find out that this stuff wouldn't work until after the fact.
Thus the backlash. Universal Studios Japan will soon be home to a Nintendo-themed attraction called Super Nintendo World. Due to open ahead of the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games, development costs for Super Nintendo World are expected to be in the vicinity of 50 billion yen, or nearly 580 million Australian dollars. Nintendo and Universal also have plans to bring Super Nintendo World to the USA.
Yes.
You want to go to Super Nintendo World?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah.
I mean, don't... Yeah.
If they're spending $580 million on this, yeah, I'm going.
Yeah.
They'll make so much more than that back.
Especially for the Olympics. Like, once the Olympics start as well, there's going to be a lot of foreigners that will probably go.
I'm hoping for, like, a one-to-one recreation of the 1-1... Super Mario Brothers World.
Right.
And maybe they give you some, like, fancy boots so you can actually navigate it without falling to your death.
I kind of want, like, a Rainbow Road roller coaster. I saw that as a suggestion on some comments.
Ah, cool.
And, like, a rainbow, like, something that, like, slips and slides a little bit as well, so it looks like you're about to get off the track. Mm. Though I'm imagining the lights would be really bad. Anyway, I'm thinking too much.
No drugs required.
No, they should do just straight up Rainbow Road. You've got a golf cart, like, you've got a cart. You're up there, you know, you're racing against others. You could very easily fall to your doom.
Well, not like a racing game, just like a roller coaster type thing, and maybe something like the Dueling Dragons in Universal, where like you have two, so at points it looks like you might hit each other kind of thing.
Nah, $580 million. Like, I want like
that's just one ride.
Yeah. Like on this one ride, just recreate Rainbow Road.
But, like, I meant, never mind. It's fine. There are going to be other attractions is what I'm
saying. This is going to be huge. If the average ride, right, costs between, what, maybe $6 to $9 million or something for a really good quality roller coaster or that kind of thing, this is going to be epic.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're probably going to have, like, a Princess Peach Castle, right? And then, like, Donkey Kong at the very least, right? One
throwing barrels at you when you enter. It's
like a gorilla in a tie, surely.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like a little section for Donkey Kong and a little section for Mario Kart. Like, there's probably going to be little places for a lot of stuff.
I can't wait. Yeah. The Nintendo Switch has made its first official appearance outside of the 3.5-minute announcement trailer released in October. President of Nintendo America, Reggie Fils-Aimé, and game design icon Shigeru Miyamoto surprised the Tonight Show host Jimmy Fallon with a hands-on demo of the Nintendo Switch console during a segment promoting the upcoming iOS game Super Mario Run. Fils-Aimé showed off the console's ability to seamlessly transition between television and handheld play and guided an enthusiastic Fallon through a brief play session of The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. Nintendo has promised more detailed information will be delivered at a press event on the 12th of January. The Nintendo Switch is scheduled for release in March.
I didn't see that, but I can imagine Jimmy Fallon just, like, almost crying as he touched the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just, like, almost tears.
Yeah. I was very pleasantly surprised with the demo. It seemed to work as advertised. Mm. I'm not one of the Nintendo diehards that are analyzing every millisecond of the video looking for clues, but to my eye, looks all good.
Bring it on. How small did the handheld controllers look?
It looks pretty big, the device itself, but very thin. It was thinner than I expected it to be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm. Do we know how big Jimmy Fallon's hands are? Because I think that would help as well.
I mean, he's probably a tallish human being with regular size hands.
He doesn't seem that tallish. Yeah. I think that he might be a small man with, like, tiny, tiny chipmunk hands.
So, like mine?
Yeah.
So I'm very excited then.
Yeah.
It'll fit my hands.
Exactly. Okay. Yes.
That's it for the Week in Gaming News headlines. Thanks, Candy. Mm. The Mighty Mighty Boss Tones there with The Rascal King, and that was the theme song to a great game for the PS1 called Rogue Trip, which none of the other people in this room ever played. And they were giving me shifty looks because I was playing the Mighty Mighty Boss Tunes, who apparently aren't cool anymore.
No, I didn't. Look, well, yes, but I didn't say that. Yeah. I was just surprised at your choice because I didn't get the initial reference.
Yeah, I mean, you inferred that correctly from the looks we were giving you.
I'm sorry we're not as old as you are.
Oh, sad.
What?
Oh,
what?
Dang.
All right, we'll deal with this later. B, you've been playing The Last Guardian?
Yes.
Man, it's been a ride getting here, hasn't it?
Yes. So I haven't actually played the other two games that they have made.
Ico and
Shadow of the Colossus.
Yeah.
So I haven't played them. So
you're totally not qualified to review this game.
No. So that's the end of my review. I cried the end. No.
Twitter's going to have a field day with this one.
Yes. All the Twitter people that tweeted us at the end of every show.
Yeah.
So I guess I wasn't prepared for the emotional roller coaster that I would go through. I mean, obviously, if there's a pet, something is going to happen. And there are a lot of things that do happen throughout the game. I guess spoiler alert, just in case I like say anything weird about the gameplay and you did want to play it. But it is very much a movie that you are playing, and I haven't played a game like that in a very long time. Like I haven't felt like I am going through these sequences to play out this story. So it was sort of novel for me. Like I feel, and it was only, I want to say it's probably only like a 12-ish hour game. It took me about, 14 hours to play. Mm-hmm. But that's for reasons I will say in a bit. But yeah, it's probably only like a 12-ish hour game. And it's, the opening sequence is basically an opening sequence to a movie where it's like, here are the people that the basic people that made it, and this is directed by this dude, and I don't know, it just felt more like a movie to me.
But didn't you play Uncharted 4 earlier this year?
Yeah, and I really enjoyed Uncharted 4, and I know that had a story, but I guess maybe because it was shorter, that I don't know, there's just something about the way that this played out that I felt more like it was a movie, and I was playing through the movie, where Uncharted 4, like, I felt like I was going through Nathan's story. I don't know, it's just different somehow, to me at least.
So the game seems to focus on the relationship between a young boy and this giant, what is this creature?
So it is called a Trico, even though that's what he names it. It's also the species is called a Trico. So it's kind of like a griffin. It's got like these bird feet. It's got like a lion's body and then like a dog, cat, bird face in a way. And
it is dog, cat, bird face.
It is very cute.
Nice.
And
it's a baby, right?
No, actually.
No. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was like a baby version.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Because later on,
yeah.
You do see several more, oh. And they're all that size.
Oh.
So yeah. It is not a baby.
Oh.
It is, yeah.
It looks like, because it's kitten proportioned or puppy proportioned.
Yeah. Right. No, obviously they don't have like a actual age or anything.
Yeah.
You don't get to see like bigger or smaller. Like, that's the whole thing. Not all of my questions were answered.
Okay.
You
really wanted to know how old this thing was.
Yes. They did not explicitly tell me. There were no baby pictures waiting on the side of the cave walls.
Did you see, like, the egg that it came out of?
No.
Could you determine the size?
No. Nothing. Mm. So you do get an indication that there might be kids, maybe, but anyway.
Okay. Well, I'm not terribly interested in how old this beast is.
We have to solve this mystery.
So that's the next question.
But how did these two meet?
Well, it starts off that you don't know. So the boy just sort of wakes up. You don't. The boy just wakes up. He has these tattoos on his body, and he wakes up, and he's just sitting. He's laying down next to this animal that's hurt. And it's chained up, and it has broken pieces of armor on it, and it is very sort of scared of you a bit. So, but through feeding it barrels that are filled with this weird light, and then slowly, like, taking out the spears that it's been hit with, as well as pulling off its armor and its chains, it kind of start gaining trust with each other.
Oh, that's really sweet.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then, yeah, you find, like, this... then you kind of, like, move around and you find, like, this, like, mirror shield thing. And then by directing its light, you can make lightning appear from the Trico's tail.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really weird. I was like, okay. Yeah.
That's kind of a novelty.
Yeah.
Do you do anything with it?
Yeah. Like, there's, like, barriers to, like... smash away and stuff like that. Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, yeah. So what a useful tool that becomes.
Yeah. It's not there the whole game, though. Like, it does go away after a bit. I forget how it goes away. But, like, for the first quarter, you sort of have it. And then, like, the last bit, you don't really have it until, like, the very, like, very, very last part. Mm. So it's not a whole mechanic sort of thing that you find.
Mm.
Yeah. It's weird.
So Trico helps you, the player, traverse the sort of labyrinth-like environments?
Yeah, because you want to get back home. But the thing is, your home is not here. You are in this weird... I want to say it's almost like a hollowed-out volcano. So it's like this really deep sort of... Like, you can't just go to the edge and climb out. Like, it's a very steep sort of thing. And you... Once you leave the little cave that you're in, you discover that you're in this creature's nest and that you... you were going to leave it behind. It, like, knocks away, and you decide that, oh, yeah, you actually do need this creature's help because you're at the bottom of this thing and you need to go to the top.
Hmm.
So, yeah, you need each other's help. And then I think eventually you're able to give it some basic commands like jump, move this way, swipe at that, which doesn't really help, or sit. So, but for the most part, I sort of just let Trico kind of move around and everything, because like sometimes there were things that I didn't know where to go to, and of course Trico's AI knew, okay, I have to go over here, so I would just sort of let him wander a bit. Yeah.
Does it ever get cumbersome giving Trico orders and commands? Like, does he always do what you'd say?
He mostly does what you say, though sometimes I wanted him to jump up at this point so I could climb up his back and go onto this wall, and like he would just jump in place, and I'm like, no, just a little bit further forward. So there was a lot of, okay, so that's probably the biggest complaint about the game is the mechanics.
Mm.
Jumping around and leading Trico to certain places is very, that's why it probably took me longer than it should have, is because it, oh God, the jumping, the climbing, like some of it is just so frustrating. Like I would be on his back and I would want to then jump off of him to go do a thing. And then I'm still holding on to him and I sort of like jump, but I'm jumping while still holding on to him. And I'm like, no, just let go, please. Okay. So you, because if you weren't like on his back and you weren't standing on his back, you wouldn't be able to then jump. Like you can't just let go and jump. And then sometimes I would try to let go, but then he would like fall in and then hold on again. So it was super frustrating to find the perfect places to jump off of.
Is that something that's present throughout the whole game? Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Okay. Like there are like edges that you need to jump to, and sometimes he catches it, sometimes he doesn't. There are enemies. You don't have any weapons. Like I said, the lightning thing goes away really quickly. Trico's very upset whenever these statues come alive, and he sort of automatically swipes at them. But you need to run away because those statues are trying to take you away into these doors. I didn't ever get pulled into one of the doors, so I'm not entirely sure what happens as that game over end sequence happens.
Doesn't seem like it's going to be a good thing, though.
Yeah, no, like you die. Like I died a bunch jumping off of edges and not catching things, or like rolling off, or well, no, rolling off wasn't too bad, but like jumping away and yeah, it's
so the basically are... the one thing that you need to work the most is pretty flawed.
Yeah,
hmm.
Yeah. There were times where I'm like, okay, I have to jump from this ledge to this ledge up to here, and I'm just pressing triangle a bunch to try to get to those places. So yeah, I think the most frustrating thing is the mechanics of the game.
Oh, I'm frustrated for you.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I there's a lot of cursing.
B, you've been telling us about The Last Guardian.
Who are you talking to?
I was looking at Lee and speaking about you, B.
Okay.
Right. It's hard with these similar names.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Very enchanting. I understand.
We'll be back after this track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
B, you've been telling us all about The Last Guardian, which is a long-awaited game from the makers of Ico and Shadow of the Colossus. In The Last Guardian, you are a wee little lad who has befriended some sort of giant pseudo-griffin thing.
Mm-hmm.
The game is built around you interacting with this other alien entity, building a relationship. What is your relationship with Trico?
Well, you guys, it's very much you both are prisoners, basically, and then you both are trying to escape your prison, and you have these statues that come alive and that will sometimes attack you and try to take you, the boy, away, but you can sort of direct them to Trico, so then he will destroy them, which sometimes can be frustrating because Trico doesn't do a really nice swipe. He tends to jump on them and then they kind of like flop around, and I've had a few fight sequences where it was a very large army and it took a lot of me running around trying to get them to Trico, but me not trying to get too close to Trico because Trico will then knock me down, and then I'm lying prone on the floor while these statues are slowly coming towards me. So it's a little bit of finagling with that.
But so he's a pet, right? Kind of. Well, I mean, okay, so he is...
That emotional sort of connection. Yeah.
You are attempting to interact with this other intelligence that you don't have any real
language.
You don't have any language. You don't have anything in common like that. And so what I'm curious about is, like, does he feel real?
Yes.
Right.
Because there is a button to pet, so you can go up and just sort of calm him down. And it is actually part of a little bit of a mechanic of the game, where when you first fight them, you actually do have to pat him to calm him down, or else he won't really listen to you. Mm-hmm. So there is that. There are some good interactions, especially since they do pull on your heartstrings, because some things, you know, like you get hurt, he gets hurt, things like that. So there are sequences where you do feel that connection, because Yeah, things happen.
Right. So then he moves and he acts in a way that seems consistent and realistic?
It's very much like a cat.
Right.
Like, he just sort of sits around, he moves around. When he's about to jump, he'll sort of wiggle his shoulders a bit and, like, move his wings apart and stuff. So it does feel a lot like, yeah, you are with an animal,
right,
which is really cool. And then, like, the way the lighting is in his eyes especially, mm-hmm, like, it looks like tear ducts. It looks like shining very, very well.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of the mechanics are springing from the fact that, you know, you don't have direct control over him. You can only sort of suggest that he do things, but he's not necessarily, you know, physically capable of being as adept as you would like, right?
Right.
So that's a mechanic built around potentially frustration, but something that at a distance, and, you know, like me thinking about this game, like, that seems really cool. Like, how do you wrangle this enormous, like, clumsy kitten beast into helping you escape a thing?
Yeah.
But when you're actually playing, completely different scenario. What's your takeaway from that? Is it annoying, or is it actually, like, does it feel good?
It's good because, like, yeah, like you said, you're helping each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, yeah, the frustrating part about, like, leading him to do things wasn't as bad as, like, the jumping,
right,
and the trying to catch and everything.
Yeah.
And, like, for the most part, he sort of knew where he was going once you got into a vicinity.
Mm.
So I didn't actually have to lead him around too much.
Mm.
It was pretty good just to sort of get to an area, and then he would more or less do stuff by himself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was, I don't know, it was really good. Yeah.
Mm.
Like, yeah, interacting with him was pretty easy.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's actually, like, controlling the boy, then, is the really frustrating
Yeah,
part.
That's basically it. You are the boy, you're leading the boy around, mm, and you are trying to get to certain places. And like I said, there's a lot of questions that aren't answered. It's, like, almost like this temple, and there are some things besides the statues, there are, like, these weird glass eyes. Like, somebody made these eyes, and Trico is just, like, he sees them and he stops. Like, this is a thing that he cannot go past. Like, somehow he's been taught. So, like, there are a bunch of times where he you have to leave him and, like, climb up these things and, like, push away or somehow destroy these little glass eyes. It's those are a little frustrating. And towards the end of the game, while you're climbing up the outside of the tower, you do, like, see that and you go, I gotta figure this out. And I don't know. It was fine. But there are different, I did like it because there were sort of evolving game, plays.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't all just, like, leading him into different places. Like, there were times that there was climbing, and then there were these really cool points where things would be destroyed around you and you're running and you have to, like, grab onto him and, like, hopefully he will grab onto his tail and swing up and climb up and stuff. So there's were some really good, like, action-y sequences as well.
Yeah. So you sort of struggled with the controls a lot.
Ugh, the jumping.
Yeah. But you're also saying that, you know, the ending made you cry, so it has clearly affected you.
Yeah.
Like, what's your, like, your final impression then? Is it, like, were you able to get past the controls?
I've been asked this a bunch, like, is it worth it? Like, is the game worth it? And I guess if you enjoy those types of games, like Shadow of the Colossus and Ico, where there is sort of, like, a sad-ish ending, I obviously don't want to spoil what actually happens, because I will say that I did get a really strong bond with Trico, and it's not a feel-good game. Like, I don't know how to explain it. It was
it's
a really good movie.
It's a feel-sad game.
Yeah. Like, it was a good movie. It made me feel emotional.
Is watching the ending, though, worth the frustration of the poor mechanics? Or, like, better question, how do you rate your own emotional side? Because that's a good indication. Like, is it really super emotional, or do you tend to feel more emotion in games in general? Or are you like me, where nothing breaks your stone
usually,
cold heart.
Yeah, no, I usually don't feel that bad, but this one, I just, like, I guess it's more because it is an animal and like because you do get this bond, and I guess if you do like animals, you'll probably feel more than if it was just like a human partner that you were with. Like for me, I guess I feel more connected to having like a pet with me rather than like a human. Yeah. I don't know.
Fair call. Pets are better.
I don't know how to explain it. It's, yeah, the mechanics are a real big drawback, but like playing the game was really good.
Price point?
I mean, I got it for $79. So I don't know. Mm. Maybe when it's a little cheaper, but if you do like those emotional games, then yeah, go for it.
Mm. Yeah. Or maybe just like YouTube the ending.
No, I don't think you can, because I think you need to follow the whole process, because like I said, there are a lot of questions. So yeah.
No, don't YouTube the ending. That's a bad idea.
That's
a
terrible idea. It's not, yeah.
So The Last Guardian is
the worst idea. Thanks very much.
But it's a bad idea.
Yeah. You definitely need the previous sequences to get to, like, why everything.
The emotional. Yeah. I get it.
Last Guardian is a PS4 exclusive that's available now, right, B?
Yep.
And you're listening to Zed Games. We'll be right back after this.
Lee, you've been reviewing, or you've been playing Tyranny, and you're going to give us a review. What is Tyranny? What are you playing it on?
Tyranny is a PC role-playing game from Obsidian Entertainment. They were one of the first major devs to engage in Kickstarter. They had a Kickstarter for their spiritual successor to Baldur's Gate called Pillars of Eternity a couple of years ago that just came out early last year, and this is using the same engine. It's kind of a surprise, actually. We didn't really know that they were working on this game. We knew about several other projects they had in the go, and then this sort of sprung out of nowhere, this weird side project. The conceit of Tyranny is that it is a world that has already been essentially conquered by a great evil, an overlord named Kairos, who is this like godlike being of immeasurable power, and you are in Kairos's employ. You are one of his fate binders, or her fate binders. Kairos's identity is somewhat mysterious, but you're a traveling judge, is what you are. You get to determine the means of your initial employment at the start of the game, and then you are sent out into this world that is being conquered by this incredible overlord, and you have to skirt the line, basically. You've solved conflicts, you deal with this uprising, and you are, you know, you're presented with a scenario where you only have bad decisions to make, and you are representing a terrible, terrible organization, and there's no room for actual heroics.
Okay, so you can be either bad or very bad. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, there are shades of gray within that. You can attempt to act honorably if you like. You can attempt to perhaps subvert the wishes of this overlord, but. Yeah, this is not a game where you are a plucky hero attempting to overthrow an evil. This is one where there's no real hope beyond that. You are an agent of the Empire, essentially.
That sounds very refreshing, especially in the RPG genre, which is, you know, dominated by these one person against the Empire sort of tropes.
Yeah, I started playing it shortly after I became completely disillusioned with the direction that the world's going in, and I wanted something where I could actually indulge in being bad.
Can't beat him, join him, Ailey.
Yeah, and and so I was like determined that I would be, you know, bad, and I would be selfish and power hungry, and I would do all these other things, and I still found myself like holding back quite a bit. You know, I want to be a jerk to everyone, because everyone else that you encounter, they're also kind of jerks, or, you know, terrible things are going to happen to them anyway. And yet I still, you know, I found my behavior changing very, very early on.
Can you give us an example of where you showed mercy even though you didn't have to?
Look, I wouldn't necessarily say that I was very courteous to people. Okay. I was definitely, you know, there was that. And I tried to be diplomatic as possible. There weren't really opportunities where, you know, you could, like, genuinely, like, you know,
engage in fully benevolent acts, but you could absolutely ensure that things weren't as horrible as they necessarily could be. And, you know, I certainly stayed my hand and found ways of doing things that I could at least justify as being, like, sound strategic maneuvers. You know, okay. I wasn't particularly wasteful. But there are other times as well where, because the early game has you attempting to appease these two different army factions that serve under Kairos, and one of them is this, like, you know, group of well-trained shock troopers. They have their own sense of honor. They seem like they're probably, like, they're kind of good-ish, but they're also, like, deranged fanatics, right? So they get their own problems. And then the other army is this, like, mad rabble of, like, they're like the war boys from Mad Max, right? They're just, like, they're armed with garbage, and they just recruit whoever, like, they encounter. You know, they're basically, if they conquer you, you can join them and see how you go, or you're destroyed. And so in a lot of ways, like, you know, I was able to justify, like, working with both factions because they were in some ways both kind of good and also both completely nuts. You know, I couldn't just be like, well, these guys are clearly honorable because they were perfectly happy to, like, burn down a village if it seemed like they were harboring a traitor. Whereas the other guys were, like definitely all crazy and all incredibly violent, but also they were the only ones that attempted to spare prisoners, for example, you know, because of, like, some good reasons and some bad reasons. So it's a weird game for me. Generally, I try to, you know, I play a lot of RPGs and I try to be good in them because I have a great deal of empathy even for characters that only have two lines of dialogue. This was refreshing and also occasionally quite paralyzing.
So how was the writing then? Because I saw a little bit of backlash because there was, I don't know, some weird sort of, like, liberally type, like, things. Isn't there, like, a lot of women in the game?
Yes, there are a lot of women in the game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Obsidian are, like, some of the best writers in certainly, like, the Western RPG world. And this is, there's some great stuff here. It's top notch, and it does some really, like, really neat little tricks that I've never seen before as well. One thing that I think is just incredible is that because, you know, it's a game set in a, you know, fantasy world that's sort of set between the Bronze and Iron Age, there's a lot of backstory, a lot of lore that I find these days to be slightly off-putting if there's too much of that up front, because it's sort of unnecessary. So this, whenever there's some reference to a place or, you know, part of history or some weird character that I should have some knowledge of, there will be within the text that will be highlighted, and if I mouse over it, there's like a pop-up like on a wiki.
Oh, sweet.
And then if I right click that, there's like a more detailed pop-up that I can go to,
so you can take as much or little information as you can want from this.
Yes, exactly. So if you want to just, like, you know, scroll through and ignore that, then that's fine. But if you want that context, it's just right there at the clear thing.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's a really, really good, like, user interface element, which I thought, like, by itself was great. But then it came into effect in a way that surprised me. So I was talking to one character who was this, like, powerful mage guy who had, like, three bronze faces that float over his, like, weird glowing fog neck. And in a conversation with him, he was talking to another character, and my guy was standing nearby, but he was also throwing his magic wand around and catching it, and that sentence was highlighted in the same way that the wiki links were. When I moused over that, he was talking to me telepathically, so the dialogue was only there if I was paying attention and interested in seeing what these, like, tooltip pop-ups were. So the responses that I had didn't reference the fact that he was telling me to do things, but he did say, if you can hear me, clear your throat. And one of the options was just, like, clearing my throat, which was also a perfectly natural thing to do as a means of trying to get the attention of these two guys talking. And so through this, he was
giving me instruction and how he wanted me to respond so that I would unlock, like, later interaction and conversation with him.
That's neat.
But it was delivered entirely through just this, like, user interface tooltip. And it really did, because it was delivered outside of the way that other characters would be communicating, it felt like I was getting this direct, like, actual conversation and command from this character. And it was just the coolest little thing that I have ever seen, or that I've seen recently in an RPG. So that I was, like, hugely, hugely impressed with.
So would you recommend this to people?
I think that it is, you know, it's very well written. It's got a really neat scenario, and it has some great characters. But I found that the combat frustrated me for the same reason that the previous game did. It tries to do this sort of throwback, pseudo turn-based, pausable real-time thing. You've got a squad of guys, they all have abilities, you know, you give them commands and then you can, like, unpause the game and they do them. But because the whole system is attempting to recreate the way that Baldur's Gate kind of cheesed D&D rules, which was based on rounds, this is based on each action having a cooldown before you could do the next thing,
right.
Which means that rather than, like, going, okay, I want this guy to do a cool thing right now, and you click on it and then tell them what to do, they would automatically be in the middle of waiting between activities. So nothing felt direct
flowed
and immediate. Okay. You were always like, I would love this guy to do this thing now, but he's still recovering from his last action.
Oh, okay.
And so you were never like, all right, here's the cool, like, this guy's going to fireball him and then he's going to, like, backstab him, because both of those characters are waiting. And it's a really, really frustrating thing. You would assume that that would be a good enough a replacement for whatever that they, you know, had in place for the other game, but it never quite gelled for me, and there were way too many of these unnecessary little fights in a game that is obviously, you know, based more around conversation and decision making and attempting to occupy this character. So I think that you know, if you do play it, you might want to play on an easier setting that cuts down on at least the difficulty of the fight, because they're
so really... the combat isn't important. It's more about the story and the game and everything.
Yes, okay. But unfortunately, cool. there's just way, way too much of it. But yeah, it's good. It's available on Steam right now, and you're unlikely to encounter a game that has a setting like this for a good while. So yeah.
Thank you very much, Lee, for that review of Tyranny. We've pretty much run out of time for this episode, so we might get you to talk about your experience at the Game Awards and Hideo Kojima's Nod and Wink at You personally, Lee, at a later time, maybe next week.
Sure.
Next week being our Game of the Year episode and the last episode of Zed Games for the year, so make sure you tune in 6 p.m. next week for that.
I feel like we just did that episode last week.
Yeah, just flown by.
Oh my god, this whole year is
I wasn't here.
Yeah, you weren't here.
No.
I just got that. Yeah. I was like, no, hang on. When did you join?
Stay tuned to Triple Z for Dykes and Mics coming up at 7 p.m. and we'll catch you next week.